the last time, and welcome to Canuck is a Slur, the show about cool and cursed Canadian culture. We are talking about the life and times of Tim Horton and being increasingly horrified by his actions and the actions of those around him.
That's right. So for those of you only listening to the audio, the mic rubbing sounds you're hearing are coming from Momo the cat, who seems to come back for every intro. Like, he loves to be here for the intro specifically.
He's doing a little cat meow.
Cat meow. Okay, cat meow. He's doing a cat meow. Mm-hmm. He almost just fell off. He did this thing this morning, right? What was he doing? He was like, I think laying on the edge of the table and then like looked like he kind of stretched and then just straight fell off the table, but landed perfectly, yeah. Obviously, because he pivoted toward his feet, unsurprisingly, and then just walked away. And I was like, was that a planned dismount? Or did he just fall off the table and be like, I guess I'm on the floor now?
Yeah, fell and stuck the landing.
Yeah. Cats falling is the funniest shit.
And it's my favorite thing on the internet.
Once again, he's just hiding off camera.
My favorite thing on the internet, excluding this podcast.
Ooh. See, I was about to make a joke about it. He said for the last time, like, oh yeah, it's because you're quitting. You're never recording again.
Yes, correct. Yeah, so what are we talking about now? I feel like...
Did he just fall?
Yeah.
Momo, you're a cat. You're supposed to be coordinated. God. I gotta like get a camera that goes up in the corner and just shows that like angle.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
He's gonna chilly walk off as though nothing happened.
He's very good at playing it off. Yeah, so let's see. We talked about Tim Horton, the hockey player. We talked about Tim Horton, the drunk driver, and his many imitators. And we talked about how would you describe Ron Joyce? I feel like the word I want to use is sniveling. I feel like he's really a good definition of that.
I was just going to say corporate ghoul, but yeah.
He really is.
He's a corporate ghoul who has a weird hate on for his friend's wife.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if she's your corporate competition and she's...
Maybe he just wanted her because he couldn't have her.
Maybe.
There's no way to know. They're all dead. All these people.
Thank God.
Luckily, though, their kids live on.
Uh-oh, is that what this episode is about?
We'll find out. So yeah, the cliffhanger at the end was the switch in Tim Horton's history from fresh-baked donuts to frozen ones. And exactly when this happened is difficult to pinpoint, in part because, this is for real, Tim Horton's tried to cover it up.
What?
Yeah. They tried to play it off like nothing happened.
It's a great Canadian scandal. This is like rivaling all of those Wall Street scams.
I told you, this is Canadian 9/11. This is the Canadian, like, or at least the Canadian, like, I don't know, Enron.
Hell yeah.
We are unfortunately forced to quote from one of the best sources on this debacle, Ron Joyce. So again, from his book. Instead of embracing the change and putting a positive spin on it, TDL, that's Tim Donut Limited, which is like the formal name of Tim Hortons, corporately. TDL was slow to admit they were using frozen product, and the store owners were sworn to secrecy. The plan was poorly conceived. There were simply too many people in the company to keep the move a secret. And rather than acknowledge the decision, TDL management chose to try to conceal it. The controversy reached its peak when the vice president of communications told the media that, quote, until I confirm or deny anything, it simply doesn't exist. What a line.
What a fucking, like, you just say you're guilty.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus, say that you've done it.
Yeah. Word got out eventually, but not all that quickly. Trying to search for extant journalism from the time is a challenge, but one of the avenues through which people were finding out is as early 2000s as it gets. Forum posts.
Hell yeah.
In fact, the text of one article only survives because a user copy-pasted it in its entirety.
It's a WikiLeaks, the frozen donuts thing?
Yeah, I mean, in this case, it's just that, like, the article they linked is just, like, a dead website now, and I couldn't find it on the Internet Archive. Mm. Which is rare, because the Internet Archive has been an incredible resource for finding old shit. Mm. So, thanks to a Howard Forms poster named High Tech, we can read from a September 2003 article originally hosted on rabble.ca, in which the writer attempted to contact multiple people from Tim Hortons and was ignored on every front. Quote, a year ago, Tim Hortons built a 230,000 square foot plant in Brantford, Ontario. It has the capacity to supply all Canadian and US Tim Hortons outlets with donuts, cookies, and croissants. From one central factory, all Tim Hortons snacks can be shipped to the hinterlands. This follows a U.S. trend toward mega bakeries that freeze their product, put it on trucks, and ship it everywhere else. In upstate New York, one Granny's Kitchen's factory makes more than 1.5 million donuts a day. The frozen donuts, cookies, and croissants are then resuscitated by staff in local outlets. Also, resuscitated is a great word to describe like an appetizing product.
I was going to ask if that was your, yeah, you're reading a quote, right?
This is still the quote. Yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, this is someone's like journalism. They're not pro this. The croissants are resuscitated by staff and local outlets. This can be done by anyone at the press of a button, meaning that bakers, among the best paid people in donut shops, can be laid off.
Mm.
This major change in Tim Hortons policy is accompanied, at least in one franchisee's outlets, with a policy change affecting what staff eat. Until now, they could eat donuts for free. From now on, they have to pay 50%.
What?
And put a pin in free donuts.
Okay. So after they become frozen, or after they move to frozen, that's when they start making people pay for them. So they're like, not only are we making them shittier, but now you have to pay for them if you work here.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, so that's at the end of that quote. It may not seem like a big deal, but to that point, Tim Hortons had kept their machinations, or at least the plans for their machinations, a secret. Less than a year earlier, even the Globe and Mail was credulous enough to believe that this big, shiny new factory was probably just for baguettes. So this is quoting from the Globe and Mail. This fall, Hortons brought out its baguette deal, sandwich, coffee, and donut for $5.99, with a big advertising and in-store campaign. Unlike most other products, which are baked at individual stores, the baguette is par-baked and shipped frozen from a new $75 million state-of-the-art bakery in Brantford, Ontario, a joint venture with Cuisine de France, which, despite its name, is based in Dublin.
Okay.
This way, the baguettes have a fresh, chewy mouthfeel, even though most of the baking process is done off-site.
Okay.
I just think the funniest thing to like call your like objectively worse food to make it sound good is like, oh yes, but these are made by Cuisine de France. I also have a funny footnote here. So in the forum where somebody's posting like, here's this article about how they're freezing the donuts now. And one of the other posters says, I guess there is no chance my kids will know the joy of smelling freshly baked donuts. And then other commenters were like, what if you went somewhere else?
Yeah.
There's still other donut shops.
No, they're the only one.
Speaking of fresh baked donuts, have you been to Donut Party since you've been in Edmonton?
No, what is Donut Party?
It is a unbelievable fresh baked donut shop that is on our way wherever you're going after.
Okay, well, we'll see if we have time.
So we are now here at Donut Party, the good donut store. Did you see their merch?
Bird.
I heard you.
There's at least two gay donuts. We got the Friend of Dorothy. We have the Big Gay Wedding.
But it was like before it was okay to say that you were gay. You would say, I'm a friend of Dorothy, but like, other people know.
Okay, let's have a bite of good donut.
Oh, are you even recording this whole time?
No, just chunks. Okay, I'm gonna have the,
Cheers.
No, I'm gonna have the gay one because it's June. How's that?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Would you prefer it par-baked?
Yeah. It'd probably be better if you, like, baked it a little bit first.
Yeah. For a while. And 14% smaller.
Par-baked and 14% smaller.
This is a good fucking donut. Go to DP. Even as recently as 2005, forum posters were still finding out about the frozen donuts, sometimes casting doubt on those making the claims. Part of the reason they were at least successful in obfuscating this change to a degree is this term par-baked. Once again, we are in debt to forum posters for quoting now dead articles in their much more permanent posts, and even in more debt to the Internet Archive for occasionally saving the entire article. This is how the switch to par baking was described by Nation's Restaurant News in 2004. Quote, the par baking process, in which a bread item is partly baked and then frozen at a central commissary, before distribution to the unit level for pre-sale rethermalization, was developed by...
Rethermalization.
Yeah, another really appetizing term.
Cool, good. Go on.
It was developed by IOS Group PLC, a baking conglomerate based in Dublin, Ireland. Wendy's and IOS entered a joint venture in 2001 and built a baking facility in Canada operated by Tim Hortons and Cuisine de France, a subsidiary of IOS. The bakery, opened in 2002, supplies the Tim Hortons chain with par-baked breads and muffins and par-fried donuts. The process has allowed the chain to expand its menu to include baguette sandwiches and enabled increased frequencies for limited time offers, like BLT or toasted chicken salad sandwiches. Tim Hortons now bakes or reheats its product throughout the day as demand changes compared with its twice daily production schedule of the past. Donuts are iced at the restaurants. By switching to a par baking process, the chain curtailed its need for fully trained bakers and donut makers at the unit level and products can be served fresh throughout the day rather than sitting on a shelf from the morning on, Executive Chairman Paul House says. So it's a very different story from, like, to give him minimal credit, like Ron Joyce was saying, like, it's all about the freshness, it's all about the baking, and then he leaves the company and they're like, yeah, but what if it wasn't?
Yeah, what if we just didn't do that? So you said you're not sure, I missed this, but you said you're not sure exactly when it happened, but what's the date range?
I think part of it is maybe it didn't get rolled out in every store at once, but it was in that range of like 2001 to 2003.
Okay.
Yeah, the decision-making process started in 2001 when Ron Joyce was like formally out of the company. Mm-hmm. And I think the story was kind of fully broken in 2003.
Okay.
But yeah, I couldn't find a good answer on like how thoroughly they rolled out or like comprehensively at once. So
I recently saw a video online about how the quality of Tim Hortons has gone down like in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if that's another change. They said something about Burger King now owns.
Yeah, that'll come up.
Okay.
I think this is insane behavior, but like people go on Reddit and like they'll go to like the McDonald's subreddit and just post about McDonald's. Like they just go to subreddits for corporations. So there is a Tim Hortons subreddit, and like of the top posts, almost every single one of them is just a post bitching about like, look at this garbage they served me.
Dang. All right.
And then people being like, yeah, what if you stopped going there? Like you don't have, no one's making you go to Tim Hortons. Like,
yeah.
What do you expect?
Yeah, this forum doesn't have to exist.
I should also make the point that I think the only time I've ever had food poisoning, I'm 90% certain it was from Tim Hortons.
Oh.
Yeah, this was recent.
Was it the pizza?
No, this was before the pizza came out. And that was why I wanted to kind of like goad you into eating the Tim Hortons pizza when we went for lunch last week.
Because you wanted me to get food poisoning?
Yes. No, because I wanted you to just be able to experience, I mean, some foreshadowing and some, I was also just curious like what Tim Hortons pizza tastes like. Because it's a deeply, deeply upsetting concept, but. Well, the problem is now after having like read everything and like research everything I've done, I really don't want to spend my money in there anymore.
Yeah.
I kind of want to try the pizza once though.
I mean, can just wait out back until they throw out the leftovers.
Yeah. When I say that Tim Hortons has been successful in obfuscating this change, I mean this in part anecdotally. I've regularly been the hopelessly old man going, back in my day, Tim Hortons had the freshest donuts. But even people my age and older often seem surprised to hear that the chain ever did things differently, even among people who acknowledge that the product currently on the shelf tastes like sweetened cardboard. But this ongoing corporate propaganda is still evidenced to this day by, for example, the official Tim Hortons website, which describes its product like this. We freshly bake our donuts in small batches throughout the day in our restaurants. Our bakers hand dip, glaze, and sprinkle each donut with care. This framing, at least in my opinion, relies on a very liberal interpretation of both the words fresh and baked.
Yes.
They do not say par baked or frozen on their website.
Of course not.
I ended up stumbling across at least two different versions of a Tim Hortons FAQ page, but none of them had addressed the questions of freezing or baking at all. Mm-hmm. But one of them does contain the strongly phrased denial, Tim Hortons would like to clearly state that there is absolutely no nicotine or MSG in our coffee. Tim Hortons coffee has no additives whatsoever.
Who puts MSG in coffee?
Well, it's just like an urban legend. They're like, why Tim's is so addicting. It's like, no, it's addicting because it's on every corner. That's why you go there for coffee.
Yeah, it's routine. The biggest like contributor to addiction is routine.
Yeah. Also, like the coffee contains caffeine, which makes all coffee addicting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think you'll agree there's a fascinating energy to that denial.
Also, there's no, like MSG doesn't have like an addictive quality, does it? It just tastes good.
I mean, deliciousness is addictive.
I guess, yeah.
But I also don't think MSG would have the right flavor to make coffee taste good.
Yeah, it's a very like savory dish thing. Anyways.
In his memoir, and I promise we are almost done talking about him, Ron Joyce admits he did flirt with the idea himself. Quote, it was a concept I had considered many years earlier. I approached a small chain in New Jersey called Donuts Galore, owned by Hirsch Sirkin, which had been producing its products from freezing them cryogenically.
Owned by who?
So I tried to look this up because I was like, am I making fun of like an ethnicity I shouldn't be making fun of?
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's almost nothing on this guy, but I think he is just like, I think Sirkin is like, that's like a Russian last name, but he's just some like American white guy. And I think Hirsch is short for Hershey.
I have a friend who like, they have a friend who they call Hirsch, but I think it's because his last name is like Herschel or Hirsch.
Yeah.
Hershey? Anyways.
Yeah, or short for Herschel, maybe that's it. But yeah, I don't know.
Hirsch.
She's Sirkin on my Hirsch. Hirsch is Sirkin on my donut. galore.
Her shirking on my don't till it nut.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah. Her circ until I do nut. That's the one. Donuts Galore, owned by Her Circuit, which had been producing its products and freezing them cryogenically.
Cryogenically?
So on reading that, I was extremely excited to clown on him for getting fast-talked by some kind of pastry salesman Lyle Landley figure hawking donut cryogenics. But I quickly learned that cryogenics has a real definition outside of scamming stupid dead rich people. It refers to freezing materials below a temperature of 120 Kelvin, or a minus 153 Celsius, and has real-life applications in food storage, so whatever. It's boring.
Damn it.
Yeah. It just means, like, really cold.
You win this round, Ron Joyce. Yeah. You stupid piece of shit.
Yeah. Ultimately, Joyce declined to go down this route, citing, among other things, concerns over the quality of the product. When discussing the company's decision to transition to freezing and par baking once he'd moved on, Joyce did not mince words, proclaiming, "The idea of using frozen products thoroughly disappointed me. It wouldn't be done in Tim Hortons restaurants if I still owned the company, even if, in the long run, it may have been the best way to operate the chain." Mm. If the donuts going frozen is Canadian 9/11, then I think that makes Ron Joyce like the Canadian Mark Wahlberg, where he's like, "If I was there, it wouldn't have gone down like that."
Well, it's good to know that he has principles about the way he runs his business, yeah. If not about the way that he talks about his best friend, his friend's wife, or handles his best friend or his friend's fucking. I keep saying best friends. I'd assume that you would like make a death pact with your best friend, but.
Yeah, I feel like that's just the way it was for like men of that generation, where it's like you don't get to have like friends. So like your business partner is like your best friend.
Yeah.
Like, you need to have your friendship through the hockey or through the business, or you can't just emotionally connect.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. Well, anyways, glad to know he has principles about this and not
he's
about
this one like actual correct hill to die on.
But he has zero qualms with releasing his fucking friend's dirty laundry after he dies horribly.
Yeah, he was quoted in McLean's as having said, "I've tried them and they're certainly not the same." Interestingly, he was one of the first sources to actually confirm the change in process to the media due to the company's aforementioned attempts at avoiding the issue. So one last time, we'll read from Always Fresh. Quote, "At the time, I felt it was wrong to keep the public in the dark about the move. Of course, in the early stages, for competitive reasons, it was necessary to keep the information about the initiative from circulating. But after many of the bugs in the system had been resolved, there was no reason not to make it public. Even after it leaked out and became one of the company's worst-kept secrets, TDL refused to acknowledge or explain the change." Joyce's public revelations came about because after he initially attempted to deflect by suggesting reporters instead contact the company directly, the company ignored the reporters. Quote, "After the reporter's call, I followed up with corporate executive Bill Moyer and told him the media were picking up on the story. I asked him why Tim's Donut Limited would not simply speak with the reporter and confirm the direction of the company. He urged me not to speak to the press and told me they weren't going to say anything about it and it would just go away." End quote.
I mean, they're not wrong. People just don't care. They just delete their...
In the long run, people forgot, but in the short term, it did not go away.
Oh, really? Okay.
So in 2010, the decision erupted into a legal battle. So we're going to read from McLean's here. Quote, "Horton's historic decision to go frozen is now at the heart of a proposed $1.95 billion class action lawsuit that has exposed a bitter and very personal battle inside the country's favorite coffee shop. Scheduled for hearing in November, the high-stakes case pits store owners against senior executives, store owners versus each other, and even relative against relative."
Jesus. This is like a Hadfield-McCoy feud, buddy. Over fucking donuts.
You would know.
I would. Chris Hadfield's piece of shit. Hate that guy. What do you do that's so special? Go to space?
That's right. Officially, the case is about a few disgruntled franchisees who claim their profits are shrinking because the company is charging inflated prices for those in frozen goodies. But flip through the court file, through thousands of pages of exhibits and affidavits, and a much deeper storyline emerges, an old-fashioned power struggle between those who are still loyal to Ron Joyce and those who replaced him at the top. End quote.
So it's not about, nobody else cares about the donuts. It's just about Ron Joyce and what he wanted. The people are
being stuck with. You'll be able to tell me soon.
Okay.
So the purposes of this episode are not to discuss law or business management, which again are not our wheelhouse. The bare bones. Well, I mean, if you have a take.
Don't, please go on.
Yeah. The bare bones of the case, though, go like this. A handful of franchise owners argue that the new par baking system, which cruelly was officially named the Always Fresh system, actually cost them more and yielded a worse tasting product with a shorter shelf life.
What?
Tim Hortons argued. No, it didn't.
Oh, okay. Nuh-uh. Yeah. No, it doesn't.
One of the owners actually took great pains to determine that these new donuts were 14.3% smaller, writing in his affidavit, "I only have this information because having noticed what seemed to me to be smaller donuts, I instructed my bakers to periodically weigh each donut in randomly selected boxes as they unpacked them."
Oh, so he did like a fucking full-on experiment, yeah. Like, and also did like random selection, yeah. And like double blind, yeah. Like
he did his version of the car slamming recreation.
But it sounds like he did like he even like thought of like
he did the math, yeah.
Yeah, he did like a well thought out experiment.
So after the suit was launched, a different group of franchisees filed a motion requesting to be granted intervener status, which would allow them to work against the original suit being certified as class action. They weren't successful in stopping it. To get a better perspective on this overall dynamic, we need to revisit the idea of who can become a franchisee.
Okay, so they were arguing that it was more expensive?
Yeah.
For a worse quality product. So why?
It was more expensive to the franchise owners.
Oh, not to the corporate. Oh, yeah. Fuck. That's shitty.
Yeah. So each individual donut cost more per donut. The argument that Tim Hortons corporate made itself was that, yeah, but you save that much more in labor costs. It makes it up.
I mean, you make it up, but you don't, even if you make it up, then it's still a lateral move for a worse product, like a lateral move financially. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe they argue that you save more than that, but it's still.
The belief on the corporate end is that if we do this, our profits will go up, right? Mm. It's just line go up for the company.
Yeah, and then, line like, go up and rate it. Which line go up?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I think they're arguing it is an improvement, not a lateral move. And like, I don't know, it's hard to say, but it like, I mean, the company did seem to get more valuable. So, So you may recall the 2024 cost. So this is the current day dollars of becoming a Dairy Queen franchisee when Ron Joyce got into the game in 1963 was $2,000 upfront or about $80,000 be paid after a year. Mm-hmm. In 2010, and I still have inflated this for 2024, McLean's reported in 2010 that the startup fee for a Tim Hortons franchise was being close to $500,000.
Jesus.
Oh, sorry, that was a 2010 dollar. In 2024 terms, that suggests something more like $680,000.
Oh my God.
Plus a percentage of yearly sales. And like Dairy Queen, I believe, was not charging. They were not charging any royalties.
Damn.
I think it's important to remember, first off, that this is basically a fight between the lower upper class and the upper class. So I'm once again hitting the everyone sucks here button. Mm-hmm. To drive the point home of who gets to be a Tim Horton franchisee and or corporate executive, I'll use the example of who is leading the charge in these opposing legal motions. On the side of the interveners was Graham Oliver, owner of Five Stores and a nephew of Ron Joyce. Oliver's affidavit, according to McLean's, quote, says if the public ever discovered how much store owners earn, coupled with complaints that profit margins are not great enough, it would create an image that franchisees are wealthy, greedy people.
Oh, wouldn't want them to have that image.
Yeah. So a private website that these owners use to organize themselves asked its users, quote, how comfortable are you sharing your profitability with the media? Do we want the press reporting about the Tim Hortons brand in a negative way?
I like that they're saying they just know that the press would report about it in a negative way if people just found out the truth about how much money you make. They're like, well, then it would be come out as negative. And it's like, because maybe that's kind of like fucked up.
Yeah.
Like when people find out, especially that you hire, like, especially when you know that you hire only like minimum wage employees, like, it's fucked up.
Yeah. So that Ron Joyce's nephew who is saying he's leading the charge of like, no, we need to like shut down this class action lawsuit by these other franchise owners. Like corporate is good. Like the decisions are good. Mm-hmm. We do not above all want our numbers published. Meanwhile, on the other side of the fight were people like Cyril Garland, the owner of two locations quoted earlier about the shrinking donuts, the company's former vice president of finance and another of Ron Joyce's nephews. To clear up any auditory Oxford comma confusion, that is all one person. And in case you were in danger of being sympathetic to him, he has stressed this in his affidavit. Quote, although in the end, I believe that the quality of our baked goods is degraded under the always fresh system compared to what it was under full baking, I have opposed the always fresh conversion only and consistently on the basis of the associated increased food costs. So he's like, please put in the newspaper that I don't care if the food is good.
Yeah. Put in the newspaper, I don't care if the food is good. I just care that I'm not making as much money.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck. Dingus.
On the same side was Archibald Jollymore, the owner of two locations, the husband of the owner of two other locations, the company's former executive vice president, and Ron Joyce's cousin. Again, all one person.
Good Lord.
And yes, every one of these people have names like 19th century factory barons, which is probably a coincidence. The McLean's article breaks down some more of their legal claims. Quote, Cyril Garland claims that the company has resorted to harassment and issued repeated threats and reprisals. Hortons has already declined to renew the license on one of his stores, and other franchisees are, quite rightfully, fearful of the same consequence that they should express any sort of adverse opinion. Arch Jollymore has endured even worse, if the evidence is accurate. It was during an advisory board gathering in July 2008, right after he filed his suit, that he claims Executive Chairman Paul House uttered his infamous threat. If I had a gun, I'd shoot the bastard. Jollymore also claims that a Toronto franchisee recently suggested that I should be caused physical harm for forcing owners to reveal their profit margins.
Jesus.
So that's that quote. Mm-hmm. 4 years later, the lawsuit was finally thrown out by the judge, who bluntly stated, and this is going to be a familiar thing from judges, the suggestion by the plaintiffs that Tim Hortons has an obligation to price every menu item so that they can make a profit on that particular item is not supported by the contract, by the law, or by common sense. All the same, the judge also saw fit to point out, as I have, that everyone sucks here. Per the National Post, quote, the fight was nasty and drawn out. Written materials were replete with pejorative language and unsubstantiated accusations of misrepresentation and exploitation, the judge wrote, and evidence presented by both sides was largely irrelevant.
Yeah, like you said.
The snow winners.
Yeah, the judge just typed ESH into the chat, or into the comment section. Yeah.
So, like any business of this nature, there's an endless glut of stories of Tim Hortons franchise owners being petty tyrants. One of the most egregious examples of these dates back to 2008, and this Toronto Star article on it is short enough that we can pretty much read the whole thing. So, do you want to read this? Because I think you might enjoy it.
Absolutely.
I mean, hate it.
Oh, can I change my answer?
All right, so this is from the Toronto Star.
Oh, God, I already hate it. I just read the first sentence. Giving a free Timbit to a baby has cost a single mother of four her job. Nicole Lilliman, 27, was fired yesterday from her Tim Hortons job for giving one of the 16-cent blobs of fried dough to a tot. I've been fired for giving a baby a Timbit, Lilliman said yesterday. It was just out of my heart. She was pointing and going, I should have gone to my purse and got the change, but I was busy. Lilliman, who has worked at the store for 3 years, said she thought little of the incident since Timbits are often doled out to dogs and children. She said the baby was about 11 months old and she gave the treat to quiet her since her mom, a Tim's regular, had been having a bad day. I could see the dismissal?
Yeah, like her referring to her firing.
Oh, okay. I could see the dismissal if it was a sandwich or something, she said, but it was a Timbit. Three managers greeted her yesterday saying that she had been caught on video giving free food to a child. They said, remember, Monday you gave out a free Timbit. She said, I had to think, and then I was like, oh yeah, and I smiled because I thought I'd get a warning. Instead, she was fired for theft. Giving food away is against the rules, said Tim Hortons district manager Nicole Mitchell. The Timbits given to pets, Mitchell added, are usually day old and recycled. What the fuck?
Yeah.
That is horrifying.
That was a triple Nicole. We had you and the person fired and the district manager.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
So you'll be glad to know that after a great deal of public outcry, Lilliman's job was reinstated by the franchise owner. In a rare W for the corporation here, they did the absolute bare minimum in issuing her a formal apology, and a spokesperson stated, it was an unfortunate incident where a manager acted a bit overzealously. The actions of that manager were not appropriate, nor were they grounds for dismissal. And they mean that it was not grounds for dismissal of the manager.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, you have these layers here because you have, like, the manager who's being shitty and fired the person. And then you had the store owner who was like, well, that's crazy. We'll rehire you. And then you had corporate that was like, yeah, you shouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, yeah, it's fine.
That's, oh, fuck. I hate every time you hear something like this, it's rehiring someone is the bare, you're right, the absolute bare minimum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so since the people at fault here were store managers, the owner graciously offered for Lilliman to return to work at another location just down the street, which naturally they also owned. She took them up on this mostly because she couldn't afford not to. The CBC reported that her $9.05 hourly wage had to be stretched to cover her $750 in monthly rent, not including utilities, plus $120 a month in transportation costs just to get her kids to their regular care providers, which thankfully were subsidized by the Ontario government. In her own words, I pay to flush my toilet. I need this job.
Jesus. This is exactly that, like, oh, it's lords and peasants and unions bullshit. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, it's lords and peasants because she has no choice and she just has to mm-hmm. do what you say and fucking come groveling back to a job that fired her for doing like the tiniest thing.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
Now the tiniest, now all of those numbers I just read about like her month and her wage are obviously like in $2,008. And so was the Timbit. So that 16 cent Timbit she stole is actually now a 27 cent Timbit that she stole like from inflation.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe you should be fired when you think of it as 27 cents.
That's true. Yeah, that's like almost double now.
And if you think that's as bleak as this reporting gets, you'd be wrong. Here's another snippet from the CBC article on her getting her job back. Quote, the three-year employee was called into a back room the next day and made to sign termination papers that read, quote, terminated for giving baby product without paying, she said.
Okay.
Like they wrote in the termination, like not you gave out a free product, like specifically you gave out free product to a baby. How dare you?
Yeah.
And she says, so I signed it because it's true. I did it.
It's as easy as giving candy to a baby.
Yeah. Terrible.
Mm.
As she left the store in tears, a stranger handed her $40 saying someone had once done him the same favor when he was fired from a job, Lilliman said. I left crying. Everybody staring at me. I was so embarrassed. The store is managing to give out a 16 cent Timbit, and some random dude was like, oh, here's $40. Like, you need it more than I do.
Yeah, no like, shit.
Unbelievable. So the manager, of course, faced no discernible consequences. As for Lilliman, while she did accept the offer to work another location, as you can imagine, she still wasn't thrilled about it. She told CBC, quote, I will have to leave. I will look for another job. I will leave just because nobody's going to like me. It's going to be awkward going back to work, but I need a check in 2 weeks. I need it. I have to have it.
That so sucks so much that she feels like no one's going to like her there. Like she did something that mm-hmm. doesn't fucking matter. Like she shouldn't feel guilty about it.
Yeah. She feels like nobody will like her at the new store because she got fired from the old store for giving a baby to a Timbit. Give a Timbit to a baby. If you feed a baby to a Timbit, you might get in trouble.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like she, I mean, probably that she was worried because it became such a fuss about it. Like she only got her job back because of public outcry. Mm-hmm. And so like probably they're, she's worried that the managers will like take it out on her that other people were like, you're being a fucking asshole.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know who didn't get their job back after public outcry?
Me.
Well, read on. So it sucks for her, but was even worse for two other women fired and charged for petty theft in 1999. Charlene Walsh and Amanda McNeil were about 22 and 19 respectively when they were accused of theft under $5,000. Walsh's charges were dismissed by a judge due to lack of evidence, and McNeil's case was dropped by the prosecution later on. But their lives were still affected 7 years on, according to the Globe and Mail. Quote, both women say they've been able to find only temporary low-paying jobs because their criminal charges show up when potential employers do record checks.
Jesus.
From the same article, quote, both women maintain their innocence, and their lawsuit was filed about a year after they were fired. It alleges the franchise owner and managers lied so that Ms. Walsh, who was 7 months pregnant at the time, could be fired rather than taking a paid maternity leave.
Holy fuck.
Now, that's an allegation, but...
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah, I'm not going to go ahead and give the corporation the benefit of the doubt here. Mm-hmm.
And it also claims the police investigation was biased by the donut shop's policy of giving police officers free food and beverages, end quote.
Oh, so it's okay to give cops free fucking donuts, but you can't give one to a baby?
In fairness, those are two different stories.
Yeah, I mean, but still. But
100% the reason I put those things next to each other.
Okay,
yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, the store owners clearly make enough money that it's like, oh yeah, we'll give shit to cops. And then there's one, again, not even an owner, but just like a dickhead manager was like, no, you're fired.
Jesus.
So that lawsuit was dismissed in 2006 by a jury, in part due to being shown footage that included Walsh moving a $2 coin from the till to her tip jar. Walsh appealed this decision on the grounds that it was common practice to keep tips in the till due to shortage of available change and remove them at the end of the shift, something the jury was not aware of. This appeal went forward only a week after Nicole Lilliman was initially fired over the free Timbit and ultimately failed as well, in part due to other on-camera instances of a similar nature.
Mm.
So also they're just like not stocking them with enough change.
Yeah.
We don't really have sufficient knowledge to know to what extent either of the women had committed a fireable offense, nor do we know exactly how much money they were ultimately alleged to have stolen. But for a sense of scale here, the Toronto police claimed that on Walsh's shift, the store's own earnings were found to be short by as much as $100. By the time Walsh's appeal went forward, per her lawyer, the city of Toronto had spent close to $300,000 defending the case. You might say there was a better way of handling some of it.
Yeah, no shit.
like this part is kind of disputed, but the one in her argument, it was that like they fired me for literally a toonie because that was what I was caught on camera moving from the till to the tip jar.
Mm-hmm.
Like the counter argument was like, no, there actually turned to be like several instances of this. So we don't see the evidence. We don't know. But like, again, was it, should you maybe be like fired for stealing a couple $100? Okay, whatever. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Do you need to be charged or can you just be like, hey, yeah, that's coming off your last paycheck or whatever. Or like,
yeah.
Or just fire them and eat the cost or whatever. But like,
yeah, it's $200. Like, you're a fucking massive company.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't say how many like instances of like $100 short, but shockingly, I'm not big on the criminal justice system and I don't think it was worth the like misery it brought to their lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
But having weathered difficult storms of that nature, Tim Hortons franchise owners would soon face an even greater challenge, one that threatened to undermine the very foundations of all that makes capitalism good and pure, and possibly risk the collapse of society itself, a slight increase in minimum wage. At the beginning of 2018, a new minimum of $14 per hour went into effect, up from the existing floor of $11.86. This $2 increase obviously would be cataclysmic for the poor small bean multiple franchise owners with anxiety. On the corporate level, Tim Hortons did not come down with any changes. They didn't have to, of course, since this broadly wouldn't affect anything on their end. Generally, the cost of materials that stores paid them and the prices that stores charge customers were fixed by head office. So any changes in the cost of labor were borne pretty much entirely by the owners. So that's kind of what we were saying before about like what gets determined by head office and all that. And like, and well, who sets wages, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the head office is like, you pay us this much for materials and they are expensive because the part making costs you more and the prices you sell for are also set by us. So when there's a change to the prices or the cost, that cuts right in your profit margins. You have nothing to do about it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, labor costs are on you. So it's not our problem that the minimum wage is going up.
Yeah.
Business owners across the service industry, and not just Tim Hortons, were divergent in how they handled this. Some of them were normal about it, simply paying the adjusted wages and moving on, given that all they were being asked was for their ostensibly viable businesses to pay their workers as an absolute minimum, an amount that was demonstrably necessary for their workers to be able to afford the basics of life. Others, of course, were decidedly less normal about it and found a variety of ways to claw back the nickels and dimes they were being forced to pay out to their laborers. Some particularly egregious examples that attracted a great deal of media attention came from, as you've probably guessed, Tim Hortons franchisees.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so there is a real dynamic where the store owners do have their profits cut into by a wage increase in this setup. Like the company is hanging them out to dry. Mm-hmm. So the company does something shitty to the owners who in turn do something shitty to their employees who have no recourse.
Yeah, you're just passing on the punches. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember when the wage went up in Alberta, I was watching the news and there were two people that they interviewed. One was a person being like, there's no way we'll be able to afford it. We'll have to shut down. This is like a huge problem for business owners. And then they like cut to someone else who was just like, yeah, we've been like paying our employees basically that much anyways. Mm-hmm. And like, this is not going to be a big deal for us because we always wanted our employees to have a living wage.
Yeah. And like, that's the thing about, you know, not to get into minimum wage discourse, but like, it's not just that like everyone is being forced to suddenly pay more labor costs just like to everyone across the board. It's like the absolute bare minimum, like legally that you can possibly force someone to scrape by on is being increased.
Like, yeah.
No one is even forcing you to pay minimum wage. It's just you. Like I heard that phrase really well at one point where someone was like, minimum wage means is your boss telling you that the only reason I'm not paying you less is because I'm legally not allowed to.
Yes.
So anyway, yeah, fuck to these people.
Yeah, I don't have big sobs for those guys.
Yeah. And like the thing is, like, if your store is set up in such a way that even the existing wage is apparently only enough for you to make a decent profit, like if it's really such a bad deal with corporate, well then don't be a franchisee. Just open up your own fucking restaurant if you really care about food. Like that's why I really have zero sympathy for these owners, is because like, but the reason you got into franchising was because it's like, it's just like a meal ticket to like a system has been set up for you and the system is like guaranteed to pay your way basically. And then the minute that system changes, like now things are unfair. It's like, well, fuck you, like play franchise games, win franchise prizes.
Yep. Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Anyway, again, fuck all of these people. Right. So here's what happens with the franchisees. So a number of them took away their staff's paid breaks to make up the cost difference. One pair of boners attracted a disproportionate amount of heat, seemingly for two main reasons. First, their rollback of benefits was wide-ranging. They were listed in a letter distributed to employees, an abridged version of which I'll read to you. Dear team members, it is with great regret that our franchise finds it necessary to make the following changes to our incentive programs, paid breaks, and policies.
Oh boy.
These changes are due to the increase of wages to $14 minimum wage on January 1st, 2018, then a $15 per hour on January 1st, 2019, as well as the lack of assistance and financial help from our head office and from the government. The decision of the following are the results of intense discussions with management and numerous small business owners in our area and other franchise owners. I also just like the idea that they're going off and like collaborating with like just other restaurant owners to be like, so what are we doing about this?
Yeah.
So here are their bullet points. Breaks will no longer be paid. And then it goes into detail about how the shifts will be paid now. The incentives of working your birthday and the day off with pay after 6 months of not calling in are canceled. So it was basically like you got paid a little extra to work your birthday.
It's that's kind of nice.
Yeah. It's like if you could afford that, you could like, it's like a one day a year. It's not even anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the day off with pay after 6 months of not calling in, which is like another like fuck you incentive. It's like, hey, are you sick? Well, come into work because you might actually get a paid day off later and we know you need money. So come in here when you're dripping snot all over the food.
Yeah.
The incentives of receiving bonuses for covering when called on days off and a day of pay for a death in your immediate family will continue. So they got to keep that.
Okay.
Dental and health benefits will continue, but for members will be required to cover the cost of the benefits by the following. Over 5 years of employment will pay 50% of the cost of their benefits. Employers with 6 months up to 5 years will pay 75% of their benefits cost. And from what I can tell before this, at least for like the 5 year plus employee level, you got 100% of your benefits covered. So you went from 100% benefits to 50%.
Oh boy.
And then helpfully, any employee may cancel their benefits if they wish. Please let us know as soon as possible.
Fuck you.
Yeah. We apologize for these changes. Once the costs of the future are better known, we may bring back some or all of the benefits we have had to remove. We may. All of the above will become effective January 1st.
That's so fucked up. They're like, once we know once we know how much this is going to cost us, then we might bring them back. But you're going ahead and axing all those things before you know what it's going to cost you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the most charitable read is they know it's going to cost you because it is like this many per hour multiplied by this many employees. And like, yes, $2 does add up times 40 times all of your stores. But also like, again, the reason the minimum wage was increased was because it's like, it's ridiculously low. So you have to find a way, like shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
So like I said, that kind of the egregiousness of those breaks being taken away or like everything we've just listed was the first reason that like these two owners in particular attracted a huge amount of like media controversy.
Yeah.
The second reason was that these two franchise owners, a married couple, happened to be named Ron Joyce Jr. and Jerry Lynn Horton.
Of course!
Yeah.
Fuck! They're just as bad as their parents.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Again, this is why I don't think any of your parents are nice people. Like,
Jesus.
So while their collective net worth was not reported anywhere that I saw, estimates of Ron Joyce Sr.'s fortune, which obviously these two would have stood to inherit a big chunk of, range from $1.4 to $1.57 billion. And it's also worth noting that when this story broke at the very beginning of January 2018, according to the CBC, quote, employees say the owners of the franchises are at their winter home in Florida.
Fuck. Fuck these people.
Yeah. When pressed on the matter, Tim Horton's corporate media relations responded simply that employment matters, such as benefits and wages, were the responsibility of the franchisees, but helpfully pointed out that restaurant owners are expected to comply with all applicable laws and regulations within their jurisdiction.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
Oh, good. Yeah. Follow all the laws, but like, fucking God forbid you do anything above and beyond that.
Mm-hmm. So while this sucks on the corporate side of things, the reason I included it is because the franchisee shenanigans and like who those franchisees were. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, for a little context, going back to what you said, this is after the merger with Burger King. So that happened in 2014. So Tim Hortons merges with Burger King and subsequently becomes a subsidiary of Restaurant Brands International, a holding company.
That's just like a very like no name, like that's almost like an ominous, like post-apocalyptic corporate. Restaurant Brands International.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of like Cuisine de France.
Yes.
It's like, this is Restaurant Brands International.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's a bunch more tedious business minutiae here, but the thrust of it seems to be that Burger King was able to move its headquarters, at least on paper, to Toronto as part of a particular form of tax dodge. The Brazilian firm with a majority stake in Burger King ended up with a 32% share in Tim Hortons, which has led to a lot of people not quite accurately stating that Tim Hortons is no longer Canadian as it's owned by a foreign conglomerate. Personally, I don't really care, but I do think that for our purposes today, especially in the pursuit of trying to wrap things up, this is around the time I think it stops being interesting to examine or critique Tim Hortons as a corporate entity anymore, because it's just kind of, it's clear to me that like Tim Hortons has succeeded in becoming, is just another fast food chain. And like they all do this.
Yes.
So it doesn't really get up to anything like more or less salacious than any of the others, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So there's a lot there that happens that kind of also post that Burger King merger, and like we'll gloss over that. Like a big lawsuit in 2017, again from a bunch of disgruntled franchise owners. It's boring. There's a lot to be said about the use and treatment of temporary foreign workers, such as there's some franchisees who are forcing Mexican employees to pay rent in overcrowded homes that they owned.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's like fucking company store shit.
100%. Yeah.
Jesus.
But honestly, like the TFW thing is like really its own topic that we could cover another time. Mm-hmm. But just interesting, like they managed to find ones that are Tim Hortons employees doing that.
Yeah.
And there were at least two occasions in which the Tim Hortons app mistakenly informed a large number of customers that they'd won significant prizes in the Roll Up the Rim contest. As far as I know, to date, none of them have been given anything. Good thing everything's apps now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So in my trawling of the internet while researching this, I came across a post on the Today I Learned subreddit from 2014 about how the donuts were all frozen now. And again, that's a person learning about it in 2014. Mm-hmm. The top comment bemoaned, "You monster. Next, you're going to tell me something horrible about their coffee and all my delusions about Canada will be forever shattered." All I can say is I truly hope we shattered some delusions today.
Yeah, no shit.
But on the subject of coffee, we should quickly address a common rumor that the current McDonald's coffee is the old Tim Hortons coffee, which is why people like McDonald's coffee now. You heard people say this?
I remember people saying like, oh, McDonald's has good coffee now. I didn't realize that it was Tim Hortons coffee.
Well, maybe. So there's a lot of unsourced claims out there about it. And one of the most reliable seeming sources is an anonymous ex-franchisee who spoke to the Toronto Star in 2019. Quote, "Timmy's," the ex-franchisee continues, "was a signature smooth taste, in his view, developed and supplied by Mother Parker's back when Tim Horton was playing for the Leafs. As the time went on and the chain grew, other suppliers were brought in to assist in protecting the supply line, matching the blend and providing rich coffee to the growing roster of franchisees. But then Tim Hortons entered the roasting business, building its own plant, freeing up all that production capacity in the other companies. Mother Parker started supplying McDonald's, and the ex-franchisee found the Tim's coffee facing a mighty taste challenge." And a quote from him here, or them. "This is only opinion, but I think the good quality coffee that McDonald's has is probably very close to our Tim Horton original blend," he says regretfully. He doesn't want to be destructive to the Tim Hortons chain, even though you don't work for them anymore. The obvious response from the porter, "That's almost sacrilege." "It really is," he adds. "It's almost like Tim Hortons sold their holy water." So that's about as specific as like any kind of reliable accusation actually gets. Like, this person is allegedly an insider. Mm-hmm. In the interest of fairness, here's a flat denial on the matter published in Yahoo Finance Canada about a year later. "I don't know why this story originated or how it grew the way it did, but I can 100% confirm that it is a myth," Mike Hancock, Tim Hortons COO, said in an interview this week. In fact, he says there are just three employees in the company that actually know the formula for blending and roasting the Tim Hortons coffee that goes into a double-double. "Our coffee recipe is the most valuable asset in the entire company," Hancock said. "We have not sold or shared any part of our coffee business with any competitor."
Okay.
So,
what do the McDonald's guys say?
Don't have a quote.
Okay.
I feel like there's a difference between someone else getting your supplier and like getting your recipe. Mm-hmm. But to some extent, it's like, well, we already know Tim Hortons, like as a corporation, likes to lie about shit.
Yeah, they covered up the great frozen donut scandal.
More importantly, if someone thinks that McDonald's coffee tastes better, it's like, it doesn't matter where it came from. It's just like, well, then go there.
Yeah.
Or support your local independent coffee shop.
Yeah, do that instead.
I'm sure McDonald's has done nothing wrong as a company.
Yeah, no, McDonald's is fine.
The last order of serious business today is the one thing everybody probably tuned in to learn about in the first place. Posed here by WKYC in Cleveland, Ohio. Quote, "So when we found out that Cleveland was going to get its first exposure to Tim Hortons next year, many of us were wondering, why isn't Tim Hortons, no apostrophe, actually Tim Hortons with an apostrophe?" Mm-hmm. Wendy's has an apostrophe. So does McDonald's. So does Arby's. Heck, at one point, Tim Hortons and Wendy's merged. What makes Tim so special? So we did some digging. You actually have to go back to the French and Indian War in the 1760s when Great Britain defeated the French in North America.
You have to what?
You have to go back to the French and Indian War in the 1760s to understand.
Of course you do. Why wouldn't you?
This is a little flourish on their part.
Yeah. Like,
basically, they do that to explain what Quebec is. So that's a slightly roundabout way to get to the actual answer, which is Quebec language laws.
Oh.
So in 1977, Quebec's Bill 101 heavily restricted or outright banned advertising and signage in English. Since a possessive apostrophe is an English-specific function, dropping it, supposedly, allowed for the signs we know and love today to be legally displayed, and the company implemented the change throughout the chain.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I knew there was a reason that I could never remember what it was.
I had no idea. That's wild. I didn't...
Yeah, there's no apostrophe in Tim Hortons.
Huh.
I do think it's important to try and end on something fun. So here's a little story I found that's only slightly related. In 2004, when New England donut chain Bess Eaton, like B-E-S-S-E-A-T-O-N, was roughly $17.6 million in debt, Tim Hortons purchased 42 of its 48 locations, promising to keep them open. And given that there are only three Bess Eatons left today, it seems as though they didn't deliver. This excerpt from a story in the Lewiston Sun Journal at the time is chillingly prescient. "It's not what it used to be," said Chip Davis Wells, a Westerly artist who stopped eating Bess Eaton's donuts after they stopped making them fresh. "I hope the new owners consider going back to the way it was." Yeah, Tim Hortons is definitely going to go back to your fresh donuts.
Oh, no. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah. Anyway, the reason I found this article funny was that Bess Eaton was also a family drama-filled affair, as it was owned for 50 years by a family called the Gencarellis. Now, nowhere in the piece does it say that that's a mafia family, but I am once again starting my own conspiracy theory. It's a mafia family.
Okay.
The one executive who was not a Gencarelli explained that the owner, Louis is not a very Italian name, but Louis Gencarelli, forced him out after he, according to the same article, refused to take illegal steps to help Gencarelli avoid income taxes. Quoting from that executive's court filings, Gencarelli was systematically looting the company in order to pay personal debts generated by his impulsive and exorbitant spending habits. In 2002, Gencarelli Sr. took over $3 million out of the company in the form of lease and other payments pertaining alleged corporate loans and expenses. That's mafia shit.
Hell yeah.
At least we take a little loan out of the company. It's all above board.
Still better than all the shit that fucking Ron Joyce did.
Yeah.
And his son and daughter-in-law.
Now, here's a mafia name. Gencarelli's brothers, one of whom is named Angelo Gencarelli III, had made similar allegations. Quote, "They charge he had illegally transferred $205,000 of the corporation's money into his personal accounts. At the time, Gencarelli's lawyer said that the money transfers were a legitimate loan."
Okay.
Listen, it's a legitimate loan, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you just transfer it into your own account.
Don't worry, forget about it.
Cool.
The same executive who received a settlement also alleged that Gencarelli's son, Paul, was forced out of the company due to, quote, defrauding the company and lying to his father.
Oh.
You break my heart, Paul. You defraud the company, but most importantly, you lied to your father.
Why did the Italian guy turn into a fucking Dracula?
Is that Dracula? Okay, let's hear your mobster.
You're lying to your...
Hey, you're lying to your father.
I always used to
I'm trying to do that Brando voice.
My friends used to have a neighbor whose name was Tony. Don't worry, he sucked, so it was fine to make fun of him.
Oh, good.
But his name was Tony, and I was like...
Tony.
Yeah, that's why I was always
Tony,
like...
Tony Gencarelli.
I would get drunk, and I would always be like, Tony, what are you doing here? Pop wanted you to look after the pizzeria while we were gone.
Yeah, here you go. See, I should have read The Pirate, and you should have read The Mafia.
Yeah. Next time. Now we know our wheelhouse.
Tony Gencarelli doesn't lie to his father. He respects the family. Another fun fact about Louis Gencarelli is that he was a born-again Christian who found God after his third hospitalization stemming from alcohol misuse, and then made the chain well-known for printing Bible verses on its coffee cups. Mm. Again from the Sun Journal. I know this is New England, but I'm doing the accent that I want. "I'm going to miss Bess Eaton because of the scripture on the cup," said Bob O'Connor of Westerly. "As a Christian, I like that he was brave enough to put the scripture on his cup."
Oh, good Lord.
Gencarelli's father, Angelo Gencarelli, started the Best Eaten Donut Flour Co., which is also the name of a fucking, like, money laundering front. What's in there? Donut flour. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about
don't
it.
Don't worry about it. I'm trying to think of a good flour joke, but I got a flour for the dramatic. Okay. The Best Eaten Donut Flour Company Incorporated in 1953 with one store in Westerly. The company's name, according to Best Eaten literature, came from its founder's father, who called its coffee and donuts the best eaten he ever had.
Fuck's sakes.
I was worried you were going to beat me to that joke.
I was going to say it, and then I was like, it's too obvious. Low-hanging fruit.
Oh, yeah, there you go. The article ends with some more input from a local. At Christ the King Church in Kingston, Best Eaten Donuts were always on the menu following Mass, she said. Kids could count on grabbing one on their way to catechism class. Seriously, if I get Best Eaten Donuts, I always think Sunday school, Just said. Dunkin' Donuts is not Sunday school.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Those are such
neither like, is Tim Hortons, apparently.
Yeah, those are such, like, what do you call them? Like, stupid, like, not platitudes, but, like, just whatever things that people say that just don't mean anything. Like, when I think this, I think this, and this is not that.
Yeah.
And, like, even the, like, they were brave to put that on there. Like, it fucking means nothing. Why does that make them brave?
Because they put the scripture on the cup.
Wow.
Nobody's Christian in the U.S., so it's like, it's like you're going against the tide.
Yeah, totally.
All right, so I promised you a list of names. We already talked about Dick Trainer and Hirsch Sirkin.
Mm-hmm.
My trainer, Hirsch Sirkin on my dick. So you remember when I asked you to come up with a name of like a cowboy sex
Dick
robot?
Dick Trainer? I hardly tick Dick Knower.
Yeah.
So sorry, please go on.
I asked you earlier for one of our cowboy intros to come up with a sexy or a cowboy sex robot.
Mm-hmm.
And you came up with Jack McCrank, which is really good.
Thank you.
But how do you feel about this one? This is a person's name. Pat McGrinder.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember who he was. He was like some friend or business guy in Ron Joyce's book. But I was like, Pat McGrinder, don't mind if I do.
Hell yeah. Is it too late to sub that in as the name?
Well, I haven't decided if we're doing more cowboy intros or not.
Mm.
We're serious now. You have a person named BJ Young, which I don't know, low hanging fruit. But what was weird to me when I looked at BJ Young, like his initials were not BJ.
Mm.
It was like Stephen Bryan or something.
All right.
So why are they calling you BJ? And then I believe this is from when he was talking, Ron Joyce was talking about, potentially maybe buying into the Calgary Flames or something.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like two people in the ownership group or something. And they were the Seaman brothers.
Uh-huh.
You got Doc Seaman.
Okay.
Go for it. I don't know. You gonna riff on that?
No, I'm good.
And then you have BJ Seaman.
Of course you do.
Like, come on. Like, do you, they know.
They've got to know. Like, that's like when the oil field company changed their name to BJ Services. Like, come on, guys. I guess,
that's
yeah,
really good.
Come on, guys.
Come on, guys.
Like, yeah. Fuck. There's like, people need to vet these. Like, you need to just have a 20-year-old whose entire business is like, you're a corporation, call me. I'll tell you if the thing that you're naming your company or like the nickname you're giving yourself is going to make it be a fucking problem.
Yeah, BJ Seaman needed some sort of coach, like maybe a dick trainer. Okay, another one real quick. This is from Lori Horton's book. Quote, after a particularly vicious hit on a teammate, Tim chased the offending party, Harry Dick, who weighed close to 200 pounds, around the ice, put him in a bear hug, picked him up, and threw him over the boards, end quote. So there you have it, folks. Straight from Lori. Tim Horton chased Harry Dick. So faithful listeners may be wondering at this point if I've forgotten our most beloved new gimmick. I have not. As Tim Horton's NHL career was winding down, Hall of Famer Steve Schutz was winding up. The two would play in the same game five times while Horton was with the Sabres, according to Hockey Reference. While Schutt was largely a rookie and may not have seen much ice time, their paths would have had to have crossed at one point. I meant to message Steve Schutt on LinkedIn and see if I could ask him if he'd, and then I forgot, so we'll never know.
Mm-hmm.
But in their last game, they played against each other, November 4th, 1973, Schutt even notched Montreal's only goal in a 1-1 tie. The most fun piece of trivia about Steve Schutt is that he's credited by a schoolmate named Gary Weinrib, number 96 greatest Canadian, for introducing him to another friend, Aleksandar Zivilyanovich, These two, later better known to the world as Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson of Rush, would one day appear on the hour with George Strombolopoulos, thus completing our mandatory Strombo connection.
There it is.
There it is.
Strombo.
That was a bit of a long walk and a bit of an oversight on my part, because there is both a more direct and more concrete connection here. In 1968, Tim Horton was present for the opening of a restaurant in Brantford, Ontario, and he was signing autographs, including one on a napkin for a starstruck local boy who had nothing else for his hockey hero to write on. The kid would grow up to be an even more famous and accomplished player than Horton himself, and after his father found the original napkin in 2019, Tim Hortons put together a commemorative ad recreating it all.
Wayne, best wishes. Tim Horton.
Wayne Gretzky, of course, has been interviewed by Strombo.
I couldn't think of his name earlier for the life of me. All I could
think
of. You
couldn't remember Strombo.
All I could think of was Canada's boyfriend.
Well, he's also Canada's boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. His most important title.
Yeah, let's wrap up. So that is all we have to say about Tim Hortons today.
Mm-hmm.
How you feeling about Tim Hortons franchise owners?
Fuck. I don't know if I ever want to go to a Tim's again. This is like, there was that story in the news a while ago about that woman who, like, all of her her coworkers like pooled a bunch of money together so that she could take like 2 weeks off of work after giving birth instead of three or something. And I'm pretty sure that
two weeks instead of three.
It was something crazy. Yeah, like yeah. It was like she was like basically going to be right back to work like. After giving birth, like she was,
they were trying to get her more time off work or less.
More. Oh, okay. They were raising, okay. They were pooling money together so that she could like not have to come. Like I think they were, maybe it was even a month, but they were like, she was like, I can't afford not to work after my baby.
Where have we heard that before? Yeah.
Yeah. And so like these, like all of her coworkers raised a bunch of money to, so that she could take time off to spend with her baby so that she could be at home for a month or something so that she wouldn't still be bleeding out of her vagina while she was at work. And everyone was like, wow, that's so nice. And every time I hear one of those stories, I'm like, that's not fucking nice. This shouldn't be happening. We should be able to take care of people. So, I mean, I'm not surprised that this is all happening because like, yeah, obviously Tim Hortons is run by all these corporate assholes, but yeah, mm-hmm. It's feels not great to hear more and more of it.
And speaking of subreddits, did you ever go on to like uplifting news and it's always like stories like that? And yeah, there's like uplifting news. This girl like finally got her lunch debt paid halfway off. And it's like, oh no.
Yeah, exactly.
Like girl does bake sale to pay for a teacher's cancer treatment. It's like, that's not.
Yeah.
That's not what uplifting means.
That's not how our society should work. Yeah. So yeah, thanks for the bummer. I knew you're going to traumatize me. So.
Yeah. Are your socks off?
There
was it everything sure. You expected?
It was everything I expected. I was like, this is just like listening to Behind the Bastards. We're like, I'm just sad now.
Yeah. Well, we had some fun things in there.
We did have some fun. I did like ripping on.
We had the Teletubby costume.
That was a good time. Yeah.
God, what a great way to get arrested. So yeah, I mean, yeah. Do we have anything to plug?
Yeah. My
any game I'm stores gonna, you want to plug?
Friend of the pod, David runs a game store in Edmonton here on 118th Pimento Way. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you're in Edmonton, go to Donut Party, a good donut shop.
Yeah.
Donut. And if you don't live in Edmonton, you're welcome. You're already winning. So. Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping to finish my book in the next 10 to 20 years. So
look, hell yeah.
Look forward to that.
That's right. Check out Nicole's book and all of the future episodes of this show she's going to write.
Yeah, totally.
And yeah, check out more episodes of this. Check out everything except for Josh's erotica story in the last role-playing episode. And yeah, support us on Patreon. Hop on our Discord. Tell us what you would do to Tim Hortons franchise owners. Because personally, and we'll bleep this, I think they should be every last one of them.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's maybe a little bit too swift. Maybe like, we need to pick an example. Personally, I think they should be. Like, but that's just me.
And that we won't bleep. As with our Don Cherry episodes, I'm going to play us out with a very stupid piece of music. You're going to be so excited when you learn that for its 60th anniversary this year, Tim Hortons commissioned a musical. And it's running right now. They had tickets for sale on Ticketmaster on a page with a bunch of 5-star reviews by users requesting that Tim Hortons bring back particular menu items. So on the Ticketmaster website,
what is happening right now?
The reviews are like 5 stars. Please bring back like the honey cruller or whatever the fuck. It's insane. It's so funny.
Wow. Okay.
So there's a sample. So it's running like June, like it's the 25th right now. And it's like running like the 22nd or 26th or something. I tried to go online to see if people would go to this for me in Toronto and to like tell us how good it is or record it. I don't know. Maybe they'll have a recorded version later.
They do now. It's on Crave, and I don't recommend watching it because Nicole and I watched it, and you can hear us talk about it in the upcoming bonus episode by supporting the show on Patreon, which I earnestly do recommend.
Okay.
But there is a 1-minute sample from this play, The Last Timbit.
Oh, good.
One of the articles I have is from like one of the writers describing it as uplifting and uninspiring. It's like, well, you wrote it. And they're like, yeah, it sounded like a really weird idea when Tim Hortons approached us with it, but it's actually really kooky and cool. It's like, oh, I think these people should also bleep, bleep, bleep. Yeah. So please enjoy this song as we go. Have a great day. Je m'en calisse.
Bye forever.
What would you do for a Timbit?
Oh, good Lord.
When the night is cold.
This is going to be the longest minute of your life.
I hate that they're doing this like Rent style. Like they're very clearly going for 525,600 minutes vibes. I hate this so much.
Well, we're almost through it.
The last Timbit.
Yeah.
If only. Ugh.
Born Under Punches is a collaborative effort between me, Kelly Gomo, and a variety of contributors to create a variety of shows. If you want to support the project, you can do so by following us and our friends on our various socials. Check out the episode description for all the relevant links, especially this one. Patreon.com/pornunderpunches. No E in punches. By supporting us on Patreon, you can enable this show to sustain itself and produce regular episodes. Join at the basic tier for expanded access to our Discord server, donate at an elevated level for monthly bonus content, or even fund us at the highest amount. And once a month, I will draw anything you ask me to on an index card. And hey, if money's an object, word of mouth goes a long, long way.
Blue, what a pop. Oh, how she loves the Stanley Cup. Hockey man is what I am. Let's go. Listen, listen to what I say. Play that game the Canadian way. Hockey man is what I am. Let's go.
Any sources used in the episode you just heard can also be found in the description. This content was primarily produced in Amiskwitziwaspeh, the traditional territory of the Nahiwak, Nakota, Niitsitapi, Mikawe, Métis, and other nations, also known as Edmonton, Alberta, the Western Treaty 6 territory. Thanks for listening, and happy trails to you.